Oscars Schmoscars.
Oscars Schmoscars, yes.
No, you were late. You were late coming
in there. I know,
but
we're remote. I'm in a travel lodge in Waterloo, and you're in glamorous showbiz North London, and so there's probably a delay or something, and it's been a long
time. Did you not get a green queue light?
A green queue light?
Yes, yeah, saying queue. That's how these things work. You
and
get
you
a little
see,
green
that's
light.
The difference between you and me is that you used to present the National Lottery live on television, so you know what a green queue light is, and I didn't.
No, that's a radio studio thing. You used to get queue light.
Really?
Yeah, back in the day.
I just used to look at you.
Yeah, well, I would quite like to bring back the green queue light. Let's see if we can sort
it out. Oh, actually, now you say it. So that's what, this is really weird. Now you say it, that's what that thing was in the middle of the studio that I never paid any attention to.
There's a red light next to a green light. The green light is basically saying, here we go, guys, bombs away. And then the red light is, okay, you're on.
Am I right in remembering that you were the person who said to Huey Morgan, now very famous radio presenter, Huey, when the green light is on, your mother is in the room?
I couldn't stop him swearing. That's right. That was on Five Live, and it was really weird. Actually, the whole thing was rather strange. And it wasn't me; it was his drummer, who was an English drummer. And because we were coming close to the, if you carry on like this, we are going to have to pull the interview, you know, or you know, go to travel or whatever it is.
So was he effing and jeffing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was really kind of most unusual. Anyway. So that was an unscripted moment in a radio show, and let's talk about unscripted moments. But here's, instead of questions, schmestions, to which we shall return, we thought it would be fun to do an Oscars Schmoscars, whereby, because everyone in the world has an opinion about what happened or what didn't happen. Mark, committed, absolutely fundamentalist to the core, stayed up and watched the whole thing.
Yeah, although I have to say that actually this year it was somewhat less of a chore because they had said that they were going to try and keep things pretty tight. And it was, I think it was scheduled in UK time to be from 11 o'clock until 2:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. They started 6 minutes late because there'd been some traffic snarl up because of protests outside. And I thought, okay, fine, we're never going to get through this at 2. And they'd actually finished before 2:30. So despite... You know, we've all seen Oscar ceremonies when it'd be we're recording this at 8:37 in the morning. We've done Oscar pre-records before when it was like 6 o'clock and they still haven't got to Best Picture. So they're still going on. So actually, overall, I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, obviously, all award ceremonies are ridiculous, none more so than the Oscars. And I would say this thing about, you know, you want to know how ridiculous they are. Citizen Kane and The Exorcist didn't win Best Picture. Driving Miss Daisy and Green Book did. But I think this... Oscars was comparatively, within the great scheme of Oscars, comparatively sensible. You and I did a kind of predictions thing on the last show. And it, as far as I remember, we got everything right except the one upset of the evening, which was that Lily Gladstone didn't win Best Actress, which everyone had assumed she would. I think everyone, including Emma Stone. So generally, it was one of the more tolerable Oscar ceremonies.
It's a shame because that was the accumulator ruiner, you know.
It was,
For a £10 accumulator, I would have basically been able to afford a mansion. But now I'm penniless. And it's
blaming me?
Yes, because should have, if you'd said, well, clearly it's going to be Emma Stone, then I would have been in the money. That's basically
The interesting thing was that when Emma Stone won, and actually we'll talk about this later on, but one of the highlights of the evening was Emma Stone doing her acceptance speech and her dress had split at the back. Oh. And she went on stage. She said, oh, you know, my dress has split. I think it happened whilst Ryan Gosling was performing Ken, because that was kind of one of the big musical highlights. But I think she was as surprised as anybody else because everybody had kind of assumed that it was going to be Lily Gladstone, and obviously there's always some surprise. There were comparatively few surprises last night, but that was one of them. And she did then do quite a funny speech about, you know, pointing out that the back of her dress is. But presumably at that point in the ceremony, she was thinking, it's okay, I don't need to be up on stage. I'm just going to be absolutely fine. It's just, you know, they don't need me. Lily Gladstone's going to win.
So if we start with the headline story, which was clearly, as you, I mean, all the predictions were your predictions, of course, but as everyone was kind of thinking, Oppenheimer, definitely the big winner of the night.
Yeah, and it was, you know, that fell pretty much as expected. So it won Best Picture, Best Director for Nolan, Best Actor for Cillian Murphy. It was brilliant seeing Cillian Murphy up on stage winning Best Actor, fantastic. Supporting actor for Robert Downey Jr., who did a very funny speech in which he said I'd like to thank my terrible childhood and the Academy in that order. Best score, Ludwig Göransson. As I said before, I think that Jerzykin Fendrix actually should have won best score for Poor Things, but it was never going to happen. We always knew that it was going to be Oppenheimer. Cinematography with Hoyt van Hoytema said, oh, look, there's this wonderful new hip thing, celluloid. You should really find out about it. Editing. So that was kind of pretty much what everyone expected. There was a lovely moment when Christopher Nolan did, probably people have seen the clips of this, but Christopher Nolan did his acceptance speech. And of course, being Christopher Nolan, he was very suave and very gracious. And he said, movies are just a little bit over 100 years old. Imagine being there 100 years into painting or theater. We don't know where this incredible journey is going from here, but to know that you think I am a meaningful part of it means the world to me, which was a really beautifully expressed speech. The only thing you say is, well, of course it was. Everyone knew you were going to win. So
yeah, so he did have time to think on it.
Yeah, time to figure it out.
But it was appropriately humble, and not in a kind of in a Hollywood humble kind of way. It was clearly that, I don't know, it came over to me as though that's really what he meant. The fact that he was a meaningful contribution to the history of cinema, which he clearly is, which we've been talking about on this show in its various incarnations for decades, is manifestly true.
No, I thought that was absolutely right. And Cillian Murphy saying, you know, proud Irishman, and it was. And I saw Cillian Murphy up on the stage, and I just thought about that photograph of you and me and Cillian Murphy taken when he was doing the PR for Inception.
It's a better photo, actually, that one. Much better.
and he literally looks like our child, because
yes,
we're 112 years old.
I need to put that on the old social media, I think.
Yeah, that was very good.
Right now.
We were there before everyone else.
This is an old groove, but in years to come,
yeah,
when they look at the 10 movies for Best Picture, Oppenheimer, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Past Lives, Poor Things, Zone of Interest, that's pretty good. I mean, you have to say that's 10 extraordinary films.
Yeah, it was a good year. I mean, this did get pointed out many times that it was a good year. One of the people that pointed it out was, I know we're sort of jumping around here, but again, people have probably seen the highlights clips. Al Pacino was brought on to present Best Picture. And he kind of, I think we've got, have we got the clip of Al Pacino doing it? Can we play
yes,
that?
Yes, I think we have. Here we go.
10 wonderful films were nominated, but only one will take the award for Best Picture. And I have to go to the envelope for that. And I will. Here it comes. And my eyes see Oppenheimer. Yes. Yes. Emma Thomas, Charles Gordon.
And I thought that was one of the weird lowlights of the evening. Because it's literally, you get to the point when, okay, this is the big one, you know, big best picture, and everyone knows what it's going to be fun. And he sort of did that in my eyes, and he was fumbling around with the envelope, and he said the thing about, yeah, well, you know, 10 great pictures, and only one of them can win. Yeah, we know. And I'll have to go to the envelope. Yeah, Al, that's what you're there for. And he opened the window, and my eyes see Oppenheimer, which seemed to be a joke about the fact that Warren Beatty had, you know, looked at the, when they famously got it wrong, you know, a few years ago. And it meant that the moment that Oppenheimer won the big award, you hear when he says it, there's a little bit of a gap before people start applauding, because they go, well, sorry, is he doing it? It was really, really odd. Also, he looked like somebody had told him he was presenting Best Picture about 5 seconds before he walked on stage. I mean, it was just like, oh, okay, I haven't really thought about what I'm going to say. You know, I just happen to be here, and I just happen to do this thing.
I thought in my head, I was hearing the director saying, please, it's been fine up until now. Everything is okay. Please, no, just
do it. The thing. Make a bit of a thing about it. I mean, here's a weird thing. I did an on stage with Al Pacino at the Hammersmith Odeon some years ago, and I met him like 3 minutes before we went on, and he was backstage, and he was very sort of quiet and, you know, a little bit kind of distracted and, you know, nothing at all. And I thought, God, we're going to 2 hours on stage we're going to do. This is going to be, because he looks like, and then he went on stage and the spotlight went on and he went, bada! Hoo-ah! Yeah. And he suddenly turned into Al Pacino, you know, full of, and I thought, okay, well, that'll happen when you walk out on the Oscar stage to present Best Picture. Nope.
No.
He just kind of sort of shambled around a little bit with the envelope and then went, my eyes see Oppenheimer. And everyone went, what?
I thought he was going to sing My Eyes Adored You at that point. I mean, actually, we should be grateful.
I would have paid good money to see that.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was just a little bit shambly, but in general, you're not quibbling with all the trophies that Oppenheimer has taken.
So Poor Things did very well, you know, makeup and hair, production design, costumes, and Best Actress, as I said, for Emma Stone. That was the one genuine surprise of the evening. And I think, you know, I mean, not since Juliette Binoche, somebody looked so surprised to be up there on stage winning. But, you know, there we go. It meant Killers of the Flower Moon obviously was one of the sort of the big losers of the evening, although that wasn't entirely surprising because I did think that Lily Gladstone was going to be the one win. Zone of Interest became the first British film to win Best International Feature, and Jonathan Glazer gave a really good speech in which he said, it's not about what they did then, it's about what we do now, and it's the whole thing is about, you know, dehumanization and the results of dehumanization. So that was really good. There was a very, very moving speech when Zaslav Chernov, the director of 20 Days in Mariupol, won for Best Documentary. And it was a very moving speech. He said, this is the first Oscar in Ukrainian history, and I'm honored. But probably I will be the first director on this stage who will say, I wish I had never made this film. Because he was talking about, you know, he wished the circumstances of him having to make the film had never happened. And then he said, he concluded his speech by saying, we can make sure that the history record is set straight, that the truth will prevail, the people of Mariupol and those who have given their lives will never be forgotten. And this was the great phrase, because cinema forms memories and memories form history. Yeah. And I thought that was a genuinely great moment. Zone of Interest also won Best Sound, which again, we had talked about, I think when you did your interview about it, the subject
of with Jonathan Glazer, and I was thinking about that because you asked him about when you win awards for a movie like Zone of Interest, is it hard to party the way you would, you know, if you'd won for Barbie or something like that? And I was thinking of the same with the Mariupol film because it, okay, great, thanks, you know, this is recognition for the story that we've told, but it's, you know, I was thinking that there were parties to be at, and it would have been, you know, I don't know, just be as that speech perfectly summed up, you know, a very much a bittersweet moment.
Well, you're absolutely right. And that's why when he said, probably I will be the first director on this stage who will say, I wish I had never made this film. And it was really, I mean, it was beautifully expressed. And actually, in an evening in which you'd had Ryan Gosling doing I'm Just Ken, with a kind of whole full Busby Berkeley, you know, choreography. He started.
That looked amazing, I thought.
Yeah, it was amazing. And you'd had all that stuff. And actually, of course, in the end, it was the other Barbie song that won, which was kind of interesting because there'd been this sort of fairly low-key rendition of the Billie Eilish and Phineas O'Connell doing the song that actually won for Barbie. But in an evening in which you'd had all that, the fact that you had this really poignant moment of somebody standing there winning an Oscar saying, oh, you know, I wish I hadn't made this film, and everybody understood exactly what that meant. So I thought that was, you know, I thought that was very well judged. The other kind of highlights, Davine Joy Randolph winning, again, we'd said that was going to happen. That was a fairly, people sort of thought that was pretty much a lock. There was a really lovely thing, which was that she came on stage because they had, one of the things that wasn't great this year, they'd come up with this brilliant idea that for the acting categories, in which there are five nominees in each category, they would have five Oscar winners, each one of whom would talk about one of the nominees, right? And when this first happened, you realised that this was going to happen through all the acting categories. You thought, we're going to be here all night. I mean, this is going to take forever. And the other thing that was really weird about it was, although it must have seemed like a brilliant idea on paper, it actually became as if, because each presenter spoke about a particular nominee. So it was almost like they were their sponsors or something. Or they were, you know, well, this is the person that I'm backing. In fact, to the point that Tim Robbins actually said, oh, you know, will win. Oh, sorry, will be nominated. But should win. And it was like one of those really weird things in which somebody would stand up and go, such and such a person is so brilliant, and like they've touched me in so many ways in this performance. And then you just have to cut and you know, see the poor person, you know, actor or actress sitting in the audience. You know what it's like if somebody does like 2 minutes of shtick at, well, I don't know, because nobody's ever done 2 minutes of shtick about how brilliant I am, and I'm sure they haven't about you either. But you can imagine if you're sitting there while a camera's looking at you, while Tim Robbins or somebody is telling the world how brilliant you are, and you just have to sit there and smile. Five times this happened in each of the awards, and the only person who really got the measure of it was Nick Cage, who was very funny about Paul Giamatti. He said, oh, Paul Giamatti, his commitment to the role was so great that in order to do the thing with the eye, he had to wear a contact lens all the way through the shoot, and the contact lens meant he couldn't see out of that eye. Would I have done it? Yes, but he did it, and there we go. And that was it. But for the rest of it, it was like every time they came to it, it was like, oh, this. And I did think that was a really kind of, yeah, just no, we don't need to be doing this. So I hope they never, ever do that again, because I thought that was like pulling teeth. Justin Trier and Arthur Harari giving a great speech, winning for original screenplay for Anatomy of a Fall. There was a brilliant sort of thing when they kept cutting back to Sandra Huller, and it did look like, if Sandra Huller's in your film, the film is going to end up winning things. I mean, Sandra Huller herself won't win, but she was almost the sort of the belle of the ball. And she had this amazing, have you seen the picture of her dress? It looked like she had kind of huge, like, wings coming off her dress.
And yes, I did see that.
Yeah, I mean, she looked fantastic. And of course, she is brilliant in both of those films. So that was good to see that. And then, did you see any of Jimmy Kimmel's stuff?
No, I was going to ask you how he was as a host. I mean, I love Jimmy Kimmel in general. The stuff that I see of his shows that turn up on YouTube, I think he's very funny. How did he do?
Well, he did pretty. I mean, the point is, it's a poison chalice. Yeah. Presenting the Oscars is a really. It's one of those gigs that whatever you do, you're going to get a certain amount of flack for it. And I mean, I still think back to the kind of the days of Billy Crystal, which I think he is kind of for our generation.
The greatest.
Yeah. And I mean, there's previous generations would think Bob Hope and, you know, so. But Jimmy Kimmel he's sort of the safe pair of hands, right? So it's like, we want to get this done. We want to get done. So fine, let's get Jimmy Kimmel on. And the interesting thing was that he came on and his opening monologue, it was fine. I mean, it was some of it landed, some of it didn't, but it was perfectly fine. He kind of had the tone sort of generally right. He had a couple of good gags. He had one gag about, because Robert De Niro and Jodie Foster were both nominated. And he said, oh, in 1976, Jodie Foster was young enough to play Robert De Niro's daughter. And now she's 20 years too old to be his girlfriend. And they cut to Jodie, which is, okay, that's a good gag, right?
Yeah, it is,
and,
yeah.
And then he was doing a thing about the strikes, and he said, oh, you know, one of the big things about the strikes was we're holding out against AI, and you know, we want real people doing real things. And he said, for example, you know, could AI have written Transformers: Rise of the Beasts? Yes, and that got a big, you know, that got a big laugh. So that was all good. But the thing that really made him the hero of the evening was towards the end of the evening. He said, oh, we're a little bit early. I've got a little bit of time. Can I just read this out? And he got out his phone and he read this. Just at first, I thought it was a gag. He read pretty, I think he read it verbatim. This, what do you call the thing that, what's Trump's thing called? Truth Social. This thing that Trump had written, Jimmy Kimmel, he's so terrible. He's, you know, it's all right on and woke and so awful. And when he started reading it out, he didn't realize it was Trump. It just sounded like a four-year-old going, and then it ends, MAGA. And then you realize that it's Donald Trump. And then Jimmy Kimmel said, and this was, I think, the best line of the evening. He said, well, you know, I'm just impressed that Trump is up and watching this. I mean, isn't it past your jail time? And that got the biggest that got the biggest laugh of the night. And the real genius of it was that what Trump was doing was going on social media in an attempt to sort of go, oh, he's so rubbish. And if until that point you thought he's doing fine, but no better than fine, the minute he read out the Trump tweet, he's like, fine, that was it. He did brilliantly. He absolutely aced it. So well done, Trump, for giving Jimmy Kimmel the very best line of the evening and reminding everybody what an absolute arse you are.
And, well, you know, if you're not going to give an Oscar to Gone with the Wind this year, then
that's right.
I'm afraid that is what you're going to get. You know, so it's kind of the Academy's fault.
There was also, there was this thing when John Cena, okay, so it's the 50th.
I've seen the photographs.
You've seen the thing, okay.
My goodness me.
Well, yeah, my goodness, when it was happening live. So the setup for it, which I think has kind of been a little bit lost, is it was 50 years ago in 1974, that David Niven was presenting, and a streaker ran on behind him. Do you remember this? And it was kind of one of the defining moments of David Niven's career, because he was on the Oscar stage, and this streaker ran behind him, and David Niven said something to the effect of, "That's the only time he'll ever get a laugh, showing the world his shortcomings." He said it more eloquently than that, and everybody sort of, you know, applauded David Niven's great suaveness. And of course, one of the most brilliant bits of that clip is it cuts away to William Peter Blatty, who was nominated for The Exorcist. So Jimmy Kimmel does this thing about, you know, this was the anniversary. Wouldn't it be funny if somebody streaked across the stage and then nothing happens? And he says, wouldn't it be funny? And then John Cena comes out from behind the scenery. Apparently, it looks like he's stripped to the waist. And he says, I don't want to do this. And then Jimmy Kimmel says, well, you got to do it. You said you were going to do it. And the next thing is he comes out on stage holding the envelope over his shortcomings.
Mr. Happy.
To quote David Niven. And you're sitting there thinking, this is either really funny or something which is going to live in shame and embarrassment forever. I actually think it was funny, because the gag was that he then walked up to the front of the stage and then went, costumes really are the best thing. And you thought, okay, that's a very long walk to that punchline. Wow. But that was a good punchline.
And only someone who looks like John Cena could actually, I was going to say, pulled that off. But you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
I do know exactly what you mean. And then the other thing was that there was a quite a nice moment, because they had Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling came on to do a thing about how much we should all appreciate stunt artists. Well, if you've been following this, there's a big movement at the moment that you know, that stunt artists should have should have Oscar recognition. Mm. And I know that casting is coming in, that's going to happen. But I would think that in the fairly near future, we are going to see a stunt Oscar. But anyway, so Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, because they've done this Fall Guy thing together, came on and just did this thing about Sundays, but then it turned into a kind of scripted row about Barbie and Oppenheimer and then Ryan Gosling said, yeah, well, you know, I know what, I figured this out, why it was that they called it Barbenheimer and not Oppen Barbie. And he said, because the reason is, you know, you've been riding on our coattails all the way through this season. It was funny. It was kind of quite good shtick. But the more important message is that they did seem to be finally getting the message that there ought to be proper stuff for stunt performers. And then the other thing, just because it hasn't been picked up as a sort of major story, Godzilla Minus One won the Oscar for best visual effects, right? So I just very quickly just Googled the stats on this. So remember, Godzilla Minus One looked brilliant, and it cost somewhere between $10 and $12 million, right? It beat The Creator, which cost $80 million, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which cost $250 million, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which cost probably $290 million, and Napoleon, whose budget is anywhere between $130 and $200 million. So there was something kind of, okay, wow, you know, Godzilla Minus One winning Best Visual Effects, when the budget on it wouldn't have paid for the catering on most of the other movies.
Yeah, when you're going through those figures, you forget, because at the time, and we talked about it at the time, The Creator was cheap. You know,
exactly.
That was, you know, amazing to turn in a movie that looked like that for that kind of budget. But then, as you say, you know, Godzilla taking the biscuit.
Yeah, and it was just an interesting thing. Now, I know there are complicated reasons about why Godzilla Minus One didn't cost a huge amount of money, and there are arguments to be had about, you know, whether or not it should have cost more money. But I thought that was fascinating. And then when we did, if I remember correctly, when we did the predictions for animated film, we did say it was going to be Boy and the Heron, which
I think
it was.
So. And then you said Boy and the Heron, and they went, was there something? But I think you stuck on Boy and the Heron. Yeah.
And I thought, because Boy and the Heron had some sort of sniffy reason. Anyway, it did win, but Miyazaki wasn't there. And then, because Miyazaki won before, he won for Spirited Away. He got an honorary, I think it was 2015, but he won before for Spirited Away. And I think he wasn't there for that either. But then the other absence was Wes Anderson finally won an Oscar for the short film, The Wonderful World, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. And I think it was his eighth nomination. As I said, I think these numbers are right, but bear in mind, it's been quite a short night. But it's a big short film. It's a 39-minute short film. But he finally wins, and he's not there. So that was kind of, I think both of those were kind of slightly, oh, all right. Well, presumably because they thought they weren't going to. Or in the case of Miyazaki, probably think he doesn't do Oscars. Although I wonder, what did he turn up for 2015? Can't remember.
Have we mentioned American Fiction for Best Adapted Screenplay? Because I was pleased that took something home.
Yes, and again, another interesting speech, because in that speech, Cole Jefferson basically did this big plea for lower budget movies. And he said, look, I understand that low budget movies are a risk, but so are movies that cost $200 million. And then he said this thing, which was, next time, rather than making a $200 million movie, why don't you make 20 movies that cost 10, or whatever the maths on it is, you know. And actually, it was quite an interesting point, because he was saying, look, I managed to get this break. I managed to, the fact that I'm here is astonishing, and and everybody should have this opportunity. But it was an interesting thing when you look at the kind of what the big movies that were sort of dominating the evening, that he was basically saying, yeah, there's risk everywhere. But the problem is, economically, most of the box office figures demonstrate is that very cheap movies don't lose money because they didn't cost anything. Very expensive movies don't lose money generally, because as long as they've got a big star and spectacle, they will in the end make their money back. But the mid-range movies have always been, that's the thing that David Putnam said. David Putnam said that, you know, we lost the mid-range movies because those were the ones on which you could lose your shirt. And it was really interesting to see somebody on the Oscar stage actually bringing that up.
Emails here. Mm-hmm. Donna says, all thoroughly deserving winners in a really strong year. I'm delighted that Zone of Interest was recognised twice. I'd love to have heard acceptance speeches from Lily Gladstone, Paul Giamatti, Sandra Huller and more. What pearls lie in those cloistered oysters?
Well, that's a lovely phrase.
I like the idea of
cloistered oyster.
Dave says, wow, that win for Godzilla Minus One for visual effects is breathtaking when you think how little it costs to make compared to the others. It reiterates the point from earlier of making, here you go, this is exactly the point you're making, 10 times $20 million films instead of one $200 million film. Spoon Lamp. Hello, Spoon Lamp. I didn't see all of the best films this year, but if the ones I did see, this is Oppenheimer, it was definitely up there with the best of them. Killian deserved the Oscar, and Robert Downey Jr. has a career best, and it's superbly delivered throughout, so no vehement complaints from me. Andy says, clear and obvious winner for Oppenheimer, only perhaps The Zone of Interest was a serious alternative, and that wasn't going to win, although it totally deserved best sound. I've never felt so unsettled listening to what is happening around the film's protagonists, which is something we've discussed before. Also on Oppenheimer, Kenny says, the last hour is a shambles. Oh, okay. Since Out of Africa, I've never taken the Oscars seriously. Okay, that's a long time to be disillusioned. Possible people who might have been robbed. Rollo Tomassi. Of the nominees, I would have loved to see Paul Giamatti win for The Holdovers, but mainly All of Us Strangers, an incredible film. Adrian says, I agree with this completely. Messi the dog from Anatomy of a Fall should have been given some kind of special award. Well, and that's certainly my favourite animal appearance of the last 12 months.
Yeah, and in fact, obviously, Toby, the guy that does Palm Dog, has been doing a lot of stuff with Messi. Messi was there wearing... It looked like Messi was wearing a bow tie I think that's what I think Messi was wearing a bow tie, and they did kind of keep cutting back. But yes, an extraordinary dog performance. But worth remembering that at Cannes and other things, they do have the Palm Dog and the what's the other group? Anyway, so there are now awards recognising performances by a dog in a movie.
Greta Gerwig was overlooked. This is Colin on an email by not even being nominated. I think that's probably right.
Jimmy Kimmel did bring that up in his opening speech. He did.
Oh, right.
He did. He mentioned it. So, you know, although, of course, that reminded me that was it Billy Crystal did the same thing when he was doing the song about did this movie direct itself? If I remember. I have a memory, and I may well be wrong because it's been a short night. I have a memory that it was Barbara Streisand for, anyway, whatever it was. But Jimmy Kimmel did mention that. It was definitely in the room.
And are we right in saying that Killian is the first Irishman to win Best Actor?
I have no idea whether that's true. I would be astonished if it is true, but it wouldn't. But it's like one of those things when one of the weird things with Oscars is. There's all these kind of weird statistics that people don't ever think until the evening. And you quite often feel that if somebody said, and incidentally, this is the first time somebody under 5'6" has won Best Sound. And you go, really? Wow. That's astonishing. But Cillian Murphy did definitely say proud Irishman. So it's entirely possible that it's true. I hadn't thought of it.
Yeah, because I would have thought Sean Connery in The Untouchables, I'd have thought he might have.
Yeah, because he was so convincingly Irish in that film, wasn't he?
So convincing. Yes. Anyway, so Abraham Carl was his first Irishman in 96 years, which is a wow.
In 96 years, wow. Oh yeah, fine. So that's the entire history of the Oscars. So, although is it 96 years? Because it's like it's the 96th Oscars, but it's not 96 years. Anyway, point taken. Yeah.
And someone who appears to be called. Back home in anyway, it's one of those kind of, let's just call him Mr. Back. Totally deserved win for Killian, being a fan since 28 Days Later. And to be fair, he's even better in this than when he plays Thomas Shelby, one of the great TV characters of all time. He's so underrated in his performance. There is no grandstanding here. And as I think as he proved, because he was on the show just a couple of weeks ago, he's delightful and charming and brilliant. And yes. So the fact that he is now walking away as the first Irishman to win Best Actor, is it completely deserved? And, it was never going to be anyone else, but, rather.
It's always easier to say that he is brilliant and talented and wonderful. When he came on our show, one of our first questions was, you're not crazy about doing press, are you? And he said, well, I like doing it when it's you guys.
Yeah. And that's why we like him so much.
That's why we like him so much.
So at the end of the day, you thought it well presented. They got most of it right. Well done. Yeah. The whole thing's a circus, and on we go.
Yes, I mean, bear in mind, it is all preposterous, and all awards ceremonies are, of course, ridiculous, and everyone understands that. And as far as the presentation was concerned, like I said, some of it went like there was a couple of gags that didn't work, and. Some of them did, and some of them worked better than others. I did think the thing about dragging out five different... Honestly, can we please never do that again? Have five people on stage? I mean, I don't remember it having happened before. If it has, I've blanked it out. And again, that's the other thing with Oscars, is that you watch four, five, six Oscars. They all kind of blur into one. Here's the really interesting thing. A year later, can people remember what won? The thing that people will remember from this year is... It was Christopher Nolan's time. It was Oppenheimer's time. But generally, what they won't remember is it was absolutely awful and excruciating, and it went on for 5 days, and everybody just wanted to throw themselves out of a window by the end of it. You know, there was a funny thing when Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito were presenting together, and they came on because it's called Twin. I mean, do you remember the tagline for Twins, which was the picture of Schwarzenegger, who's like, the size of a house, and then Danny DeVito standing next to him, and they're both wearing the same clothes. And the tagline for Twins was, only their mother can tell them apart, which is very funny.
It's very good.
But then they did quite a good gag about the thing that they've got in common is that they both tried to kill Batman. And then they did a sort of an extended gag about both being in a Batman. And I know this is all scripted, but Danny DeVito said to, he said to Arnold Schwarzenegger, he said, so what did he use against you? Was it heat? Because, of course, no one puts me in the cooler. And Schwarzenegger said, no, he used the one thing that I can't fight against, love. And Danny DeVito said, oh, he threw me out of a window. So, you know, there were good moments. There were good moments.
If you have any questions for us, questions, Schmestions will be returning, obviously, but this has been an Oscar.
Schmosca.
An Oscar Schmosca.
Has it been an Oscar Schmosca?
An Oscar Schmosca extravaganza. I think that's what it's been. So there'll be... when does Mark? I'm asking you a production question here, is this going to go out straight away, or is it not going to wait till Wednesday?
No, I think it's going up now. I think it's basically as far as I understand, it's going out virtually unedited. So if anything that any of us have said during the course of this is incorrect, it's fine. We were just rushing it to you. I mean, because it's like, like a few hours ago, this thing was on television. And as I said, I'm in the glamorous, whatever it is, Travelodge. And then, of course, I thought, it's fine. Well, I'll get 3.5 hours sleep. That'll be brilliant. But, of course, when you get 3.5 hours, you don't get 3.5 hours sleep. What happens is you just lie there awake thinking, well, you know this because you're the most, what do you call it? What's the word when you can't sleep?
Insomniac.
There we are. So we're all... So if we've made mistakes, it's because we're tired. But we wanted to get it to you first.
That's right. But
first nonetheless.
Yes. I think there was a joke which I heard years ago about Sky News, which the tagline was, the other journalist said, Sky News, never wrong for long. So, which is very unfair because Sky News are fantastic. So this is like a journalist joke from back in the day. So I shall co-opt it for us.
Yeah, and congratulations to La La Land for winning Best Picture.
Yes, that's right. Driving Miss Daisy, I think that was fine as a winner.
What was your version of the tagline for Green Book?
This time the racist's in the back. Does that work? Is that the right way around? I've forgotten.
No, it's the other way around, isn't it?
That's right.
In Driving Miss Daisy, the racist is in the back. In Green Book, it's this time the racist is in the front.
There you go. So as a tagline went, it was memorable. In fact, so memorable, I got it the wrong way around. I think it's no one's surprise. Yeah,
but we're all tired.
That's true.
I've got to go to a screening now. I've got to go and see. I'm going from here to Dave Norris's Universal screening room to watch Drive Away Dolls, which then we'll be reviewing on the next Kermit and Mayo's take. So
stand by for updates, which will be with you on Friday. Enjoy the movie. Thank you for listening.